Intervju Radija Študent.
Steve Lehman. Ker bo nocoj s svojim oktetom igral v klubu Cankarjevega doma in tudi zato, ker je Steve Lehman zelo zanimiv muzičist, smo se z njim pred koncertom še na kratko pogovorili.
Okay, hello Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very fine.
Good.
What about you? You're now here in Ljubljana with having a one day rest ahead of you. Is that a rare occurrence while touring?
It happens sometimes, you get a kind of a day off, but yeah, the norm is that you go to a new city every night, yeah.
Yeah. How does that look like in terms of performance? I mean, you got to get some airport, flying, hotel, fitness or some such.
Yeah, you kind of get used to it, you just sort of sleep whenever you can, but you get into a rhythm, yeah, so oftentimes you arrive at the airport, go to the hotel, take a shower, go to the sound check, eat dinner, play the concert, and that's it, yeah.
You actually manage to, write music or practice on such occasions or tours?
Depends, sometimes. I mean, sometimes we travel by train, in which case you can do some work on the train. Sometimes you have a long wait in the airport. Today we were in Lisbon Airport for about 4 hours, so yeah, you can do some composing or reading.
Probably takes time, focus.
Well, if you travel enough, you start to have access to these airport lounges, so they're a little bit quieter and you can kind of put your headphones on and do some work.
You're touring with a almost small big band. There are 8 of you in the band. Does your role as the organizer of the music, of the band, in any way reflect, the social relations between the 8 of you? Or to put it differently, maybe does any of you have this role of social organizer and does it reflect in the music the other way?
I think, each person in the ensemble has a very distinct personality and the music is designed to give each person an opportunity to change the music, to express themselves. So I think that comes across in the music. Hopefully it does on some level, for sure.
What of you as the composer, as the organizer, where does this come out when you let go around?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it does. I mean, it maybe people just assume I'm the one who knows what time we're supposed to meet in the lobby and what happens if the flight gets canceled. It's kind of my responsibility. But other than that, it's kind of, yeah, we're all friends. And
just for start, tell me something about this album that you're gonna present, Mizeh Anabim, and try to express it in some words that sort of give off the specificity of this album compared to your previous recording, let's say.
Right. Well, this album, like the first one, has to do with kind of in-between spaces in the music and thresholds and things like when a single note starts to sound like a harmony or when a harmony starts to sound like a single note or when an electronic sound kind of sounds half acoustic, half electronic. And what's different is that there's use of live electronics. On the second album, we use a vibraphone that has a special tuning, which kind of opens up some things harmonically for us. And then there's a couple of sort of reimaginings, arrangements of Bud Powell compositions, which there weren't on the first album.
Can you elaborate on the note sounding as a harmony? That sounds rather curious.
Yeah, so if you think about like a church bell, for example, we think of it as a kind of singular, unified sound. But when you listen to it, you can actually hear that there's multiple pitches sounding simultaneously. It's almost like a chord at the piano. So it's kind of half single sound, half harmony. That's probably a pretty good everyday example.
And how do you try to bring this up when composing for this ensemble of yours?
Well, there's kind of sound phenomenon, musical phenomenon that make us hear something as a chord or as a single sound and hear different textures in different ways. And you can kind of try to understand that better and take advantage of it when you write music to sort of realize those kind of musical moments.
But these sort of additional sounds that occur when different sounds collide, so to say, they're also very space dependent. So I presume this dimension of your music is probably always set anew by the architecture and stuff.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent the space can affect how we hear sound for sure. But there's also a lot of things that stay the same, no matter what kind of space you're in. So yeah, I think in our music there's things that are the same no matter what. And then yeah, depending on the space, you could hear it differently for sure.
You as an academic who has probably got a little more knowledge in elaborating this spectral finesse that you want to achieve, how do you sometimes have the problem to when you want to transmute this knowledge to the other band members? What do you want of them?
Not really. I mean, I think there may be a misconception of musicians as, I think most musicians are intellectual and academic and study music very seriously and are very adept at understanding complex musical concepts and otherwise. Some people do it in an academic context, some don't. I don't consider myself more sort of having more intellectual rigor than anyone else in the ensemble, but maybe less than some of the people in the ensemble. So yeah, haven't had any problems with that.
Well, this spectral thing sort of seemed interesting when I was reading the reviews about your album, and I noticed, I don't know if you agree with me, some sort of laziness on the part of the critics that this word spectral something is just being thrown around because it's easy to use. It's a filler with little descriptive or
right.
Value. How what's your view on that?
I think being a music critic is hard because you're trying to describe the music and be accurate, but you're also trying to communicate ideas about music to an audience and a readership that may have little to no kind of musical background or theoretical kind of background when it comes to music. So I think sometimes that results in a sort of somewhat unsatisfying summary of terms or kind of general way of talking about music, because that's what's the best fit for whoever the readership might be, you know.
But does it happen to you that you actually get some additional insight when reading reflections of your music?
That I get insights on my own music from reading a critique? Yeah, sometimes, sure.
Could you maybe, do you have any anecdotes on this or any, elaborate on how does this actually happen?
Sure, someone might review a concert and say that they felt a relationship between two pieces because the drummer is featured very prominently, and that might be something that I hadn't thought about before, so it gives me a new way to think about the music.
But do you read the reviews of your music, and what do they actually mean to you aside from the promotional value?
I read, I mean, if I see a review of a recording of mine or a concert, I'll read it, sure. It just gives me a perspective on how one person is hearing my music, how they're engaging with it, how they're relating to it. So, yeah, that's usually valuable.
Do you see any sort of dispositions of writing that are prominent among the critics and actually stray away from whatever you think you would like to achieve with the music?
I think, like I said before, I think good critics are trying to communicate information to their readership. I think there's a lot of different ways to do that. There's some idioms that are repeated over and over, but oftentimes when they're repeated, it's because they're useful and they work. I suppose there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of factors. There's a lot of constraints when you write a review in terms of how much space you have, how much time you have, based on how much money you're getting paid. I think I try to give people who review my music the benefit of the doubt that they did the best with the resources that were available to them. I don't love it when I see spelling errors in reviews because I think that's just lazy. I don't love it when I see simple factual errors in reviews, like somebody says that Tim Albright is the tenor saxophonist when he's actually the trombone player, because I think that's lazy. But other than that, I think people, take time to write about music. I have to be grateful for that and try to assume they did the best they could with the time that they had.
When you write about music, let's say in the context of your pedagogic work, how do you cope with the dancing about architecture thing?
I haven't had that issue. I can think of a lot of examples of people theorizing music that's very clear to me. So I try to follow those models. And then if I'm doing publishing or writing something that's about, like in the domain of historical musicology that's history-based, I think that's a good use of writing to describe a cultural context. Writing about music in great detail, the more detail you go into it, the more you have to assume that your readership is familiar with the terminology and the milieu. So if you're writing an article about how a battery works, you have to assume that your readership has some familiarity with chemistry and physics I think if your readership does have that understanding, there's no limits on describing music. If they don't, then, if I say that this, the first chord is in a piece of music of mine is, a D Lydian chord. I know what that means. I know what that sounds like. I don't know if you know what that means. Yeah, so that doesn't mean you understand the music any better or worse than I do, but there's an obstacle there in terms of me describing music that you have that I don't have. So I think writing about music can be difficult if you're writing for people that aren't specialized in music. And that's where we get back to the need for sort of general language in music criticism, because the vast majority of readership hasn't studied music very much.
Na tej točki pogovora nam je odpovedala snemalna tehnika, pa smo le še na kratko povprašali Steva, na kateri ravni komunicira s poslušalci z naslovom svojega albuma Mizo na Bim, izrazom, ki se nanaša na fenomen neskončnega niza slike v sliki, ki je v sliki.
So, I think the title Mizo na Bim is more kind of arrived at it thinking about my own creative process and kind of feeling like even as I'm trying to discover new sides of my own creativity, I'm always kind of rediscovering myself over and over again and kind of coming back to things that are unchanging about my own perspective on music, even as I'm trying to find something fresh or more personal. And I think that's probably good to kind of have that balance of trying to discover new areas musically, but also sort of accepting and acknowledging that you are who you are and you keep kind of rediscovering yourself as you do that. So that's kind of where the title comes from.
Well, the you are who you are in terms of music, could you go a little further on that, please?
Yeah, I think there's certain things in music that, speaking for myself, that I have related to my whole life, and there's different ways of kind of articulating them, framing them, executing them, but there's a lot about them that stays the same, whether it be something about rhythm or harmony or instruments I like, or, you know, any of the musical parameters. So I think there's some things that have always been the same and will probably never change, and there's other elements of my music that will probably always be changing.
Mm-hmm. And this cast of yours, what do they do to you there on this quest?
Well, you know, they all make the music much better than I can make it by myself. And that's part of composition, is choosing which musicians you're going to work with. That's probably the most important step. You know, they bring their own ideas, their own sounds into the music that I've composed and make it good, you know.
Stevom se je, žal sicer tehnološko malce okrnjeno, pogovarjal Anže Zorman. Zakaj več glasbenih zadev strani Steva Lemana, mu bo treba prisluhniti nocoj v klubu Cankarjevega doma.
Intervju Radija Študent.